Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
What's going on? Welcome to Kennel and Bell on this Thursday. Big show we have to get to. Our buddy Emery Hunt's going to come on, coming off of a 4-2 performance last week. Joey said in his thing, he's like, hit him up about what happened to the Georgia Tech game. It sounded like Joey might have lost some money on one of those bets that he
salty,
took.
Joe.
Because then all of a sudden he was telling me basically to lay into him when he comes on. And he's like, oh, he actually had a pretty good week when he looked at the overall record. So we'll get him on here for some picks. NFL and college picks. We'll preview the college football weekend, what potentially could be some upsets. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on Bradley Beal's new extension on his deal. We'll do that later in the show as well. We had a situation yesterday in the NFL. We've kind of joked about this before. Like, for all the fans that come up and yell at players during games, or they, you know, trash them on the road, like, man, wouldn't it be great if you could just let them have at it? Like, all those fans who act big and they want to come act like they could take a player down. Like, let's see it really happen. We may have seen something like that happened, although I'm a little bit suspicious of exactly what happened here. So Myles Garrett is a incredible player, number one overall pick from the Cleveland Browns. He's a big dude. He's a specimen. Like, at the NFL draft combine, they were saying he was one of the most impressive specimens they had ever seen in the history. So you know the dude's big. So he had an interesting tweet that he put out yesterday where he talked about this fan interaction where he said he thought a, quote, fan hopped out of his car to take a picture with me and then punched me in my face. Put your legs into it. Might have actually made me flinch. The tweet went viral. I still haven't heard Myles Garrett talked about it. And then he did follow it up, said, was in my car, flagged me down for a picture, and I cracked the window enough for the camera to get to my face. Took the pick and gave me a pillow tap. Credit, I guess, to Myles Garrett for not getting out and, like, doing something. Because that, to me, like, this is what I've always been told. Like, hey, and this is, as an athlete, you kind of get in these situations. Because I think there are, especially in football, it's a physical sport. Fans are always challenging players. Like, they just, hey, I'm going to stack up, see how I stack up against this guy. I've always been under the understanding, like, hey, if you throw the first punch, you're in trouble. Like, no matter what the person says, if you throw that first punch, you could get sued, you could be held liable, it could cost you a lot of money. But if the other person throws the first punch, then it's fair game. You're saying no,
it's not.
That is not the case.
I mean, I got no problem if you whoop his ass. Like, I got no problem. But look, in today's legal system, what people get sued for, it's a no win for you. Like, you know what I mean? Even if he does that to you, again, I would support you whooping his tail, but it's probably easier to do what he did. Contact the authorities, right? Yes. Like, not saying that I would, but that's probably the best thing to do just to avoid, you know, any chance that someone comes after you for one reason or another. Do you know what I mean?
This is one of those ones, too, where players get criticized a lot for how they treat fans sometimes. You know, there's all, you know, and players get put in bad situations. Sometimes they say no to a kid and it's on camera. This is where it's really hard to fall because there are some crazy fans out there and you never know what type of reaction you're going to get. So if a player is a little bit aloof or standoffish, like, don't assume he's a jerk. I mean, you just can't assume that. And I think a lot of times, I don't know. I was going to say something about Dan Marino. I think he gets criticized a lot for some of his fan interactions. He's always been great to me. Put yourself in a Dan Marino's shoes, or even more like a LeBron or a Tiger, in a different stratosphere where they can never have a private day.
Yeah.
Never.
You have no life probably privately outside the confines of your home or the very or the environments that you can control, like private planes or car, whatever it is that keeps you contained and keeps your family away from the general public. That's the only life you live.
Yeah.
And I guess to some degree people would say, hey, sign up for, like, you know, you make a lot of money. And yeah, all of that is true. But, you know, you do have to then respect when someone is like, look, man, I don't want to get involved in that. If I stop to sign one, I got to sign a million.
Right.
And then when, you know, like, I had an instance, and I'm not, I'm it's nowhere near. I just got into Philly, right? we talked about my first bucket. Like, yeah. It was like 3 weeks after the first bucket, they dropped me into a playoff game against Milwaukee in game six, and I had a couple points. And so game seven, Larry Brown throws me out there. I am absolutely nobody, but we win the Eastern Conference Finals, and I spark the run that does it. The next day, I'm at the King of Prussia Mall with my family, just hanging out. Like, I'm regular. Like, yeah. You know, no one wants my autograph. One person asked me for an autograph, and I stopped to sign it. Before I knew it, there were five Buzz. People.
Yep.
The whole mall converged on my parents and I to the point where, like, I'd never seen anything like it. I couldn't find them in this crowd anymore. And, you know, that was just off of one little moment in one game. Imagine that being your life. Everywhere you go, stopping to sign one autograph becomes a parade of people asking for one. Like, you can't do that all the time.
It's one of those things that can be really cool. Like, I still, like, my wife even, she, like, rolls her eyes because every once in a while I'll get somebody who'll say, can I get a picture? Yeah. Or they'll recognize me, and it's really cool. And I still have that appreciation for it. And I never really got to that level where it got, you know, nervous or it got annoying because you couldn't eat anywhere.
Right.
So, but again, it's like, it's a different scenario.
Yeah.
It's a totally different mindset.
I was like you. Like, that. Right. I enjoyed that. I had never right. experienced it before. And after that, I took time to sign as much as I could. Like, I never said no. I might have to leave, and so I couldn't get them all. But, I never had to deal with the type of fame and the type of autograph seeking that some of these higher profile players do. So while I could appreciate it, I never held, you know, any kind of, you know, resentment towards a dude who just couldn't afford to stop because he'd be there for hours. So I always respected their, you know, look, they got something to do. They want to go. They signed plenty of autographs behind closed doors. That's what most fans don't realize. Like,
right.
You have autograph signing days where you sign thousands of autographs. So it's not really, you know, it's not part of your contract to stop and sign for every fan that's on the street. So I never had a problem with guys that did it.
No, for sure. Joey, did you want to chime in? My G-Chat is down. I don't have Wi-Fi in here, but he was trying to reach out to me about something.
So there is actually a guy posted a video that he said is of the guy who punched Miles Turner, Miles Garrett. And but it's just a video of a guy driving away. And Miles Garrett responded and said, thanks for the video, but how are you going to post it after he punched me? It was a soft bop, and then he slid. So that's the most recent thing.
All right. It is a little bizarre. I don't know. Maybe we'll get more details on it when Miles Garrett answers questions about it. But it is kind of interesting. And it can be dangerous. Like, some of these guys, it gets a little bit dangerous for some of them. In Vegas news, Patrick Mahomes was the front runner by a mile.
Sure.
Just about 3 weeks ago. Then he has a couple rough weeks. They lose a couple games. All of a sudden, my guy. My preseason pick, Russell Wilson from the Seattle
Seahawks. Not Kirk Cousins, just so we're your guy is not Kirk Cousins.
No, I have a bunch of guys. Russell Wilson is one of them. Kirk Cousins will save him for later. Maybe he gets in that race. But Russell Wilson has overtaken Patrick Mahomes. I think this is significant. I think it's finally time Russell Wilson really – I mean, he's gotten his credit because he's gotten two $100 million deals, so he's got it. But I still think he flies under the radar as far as – elite quarterbacks, and I think he's clearly there. And I also think it's pretty cool that Deshaun Watson is bumping up a little bit. But Patrick Mahomes dropping out of that lead spot is probably the biggest, you know, eyebrow raiser of these moves for sure.
Yeah, I've got no problem. Russell Wilson, the Seahawks are sitting at 5-1 with a roster that you would, you know, on paper, you're like, you probably wouldn't have anticipated that. He's got 14 touchdown passes, zero interceptions. He's the only quarterback to start every game this year with no interceptions thrown. And he's got the highest QBR. He's 100, passer rating, 124.7. So his numbers are nasty. I would say this though. I think that Patrick Mahomes with the backslide because of what's happened lately with the injury and so on and so forth, he will creep back up in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you imagine that Seattle's probably at some point going to hit a little skid.
Right.
Russell's may still play great, but he'll hit a skid. And then, you have to imagine the Kansas City, they're going to get it together. That guy's playing banged up and so on and so forth. So I think it's a two-person race. And then I think Deshaun Watson and Christian McCaffrey are in that tier just below them. But Christian McCaffrey's going to have to do – like, he's going to have to break records for
Christian McCaffrey. I don't know. I think he might – because of the way this it's transpired with Cam getting hurt.
Yeah.
Kyle Allen takes over. Christian McCaffrey's asked to carry so much more of the workload. He's putting up some historic numbers. I just worry about his health. Like, can he do it for 16 games?
Yeah.
Can he miss any time? But I think also what's interesting, what you said, timing does matter.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, it shouldn't. Like, you should look at a compilation of the whole season. But it's a good news for Patrick Mahomes. They lose these, and they get back to right where they were and kind of number one seed challenging the Patriots. But in order to do that, they have to win tonight, which is a very interesting game. You're saying nah? Stop. You're saying it's over? Stop. You're saying it's a wrap? Stop. You're not buying into the Broncos getting better?
You know how we talked about the Dallas coming out and being flat after two losses?
Yep.
And not being the team that looked like they were foaming at the mouth, ready to go. I imagine that Kansas City is going to be firing on all cylinders tonight. I don't see them as that type of team. I have more trust in Andy Reid than that to have them ready to play. And I think offensively, hearing the chirps of people like you and I up here about like their vulnerability, I think they'll be firing on all cylinders.
So I think offensively they'll be fine. Patrick Mahomes, we read in the update at this hour that his ankle's okay. I don't know if it is. An ankle can linger. Now, maybe it's not as bad. Maybe it's slowly starting to get better, but I still worry about that. And I think it has kind of thrown him off a little bit. And you're talking about weight bearing. You know, when you're trying to plant, make throws, it does impact you. So I'm a little bit worried about that from that standpoint.
He was only outside of the pocket. I think he had 5 throws, I read, outside the pocket last week. And typically, like those kind of magician type of plays, he's up in the teens. Like he's 12, 13, 14 of those per game. So, look, you know this. When you can't do those type of things as a quarterback, then it forces you to play, you know, more streamlined in the pocket type of football. So I do think it's a factor. Like he's not being able to move the way he's used to moving.
What you got, Joey?
I actually had a question about the MVP race. It probably goes into this too, but the interesting names on there to me were Brady. I wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on Brady and Rodgers that at both at 20-1. If they keep winning, like if the Patriots are undefeated, like week 13, can't Brady play his way back in MVP?
Yes. First of all, he has branding going for him. He's Tom Brady. He's the GOAT. I think it's his last year. I do. I just have a feeling. I don't like trying to say, hey, this is it, but it's 20. It's a nice round number.
Yep.
If they win, I think it's for sure he walks away. If they lose, I think there might be part of him that says, I want to go out in a winning note.
Yep.
But there's also, and we had a little bit with Drew Brees, and he fell off at the end because Patrick Mahomes was so absurdly good. But there's a legacy aspect to it, too, you know, like that comes into play. I think it's just a reality of the situation. If Brady puts in the position his team again to be a number one seed and challenging again, I think he would. Even though it's a statistical award and he's not going to have the best statistics, I still think he's Brady. So they kind of are, it's easier to overlook that.
Yeah, I guess this. It's probably not fair to draw this comparison, so I won't do it. I'm not gonna do it. Like, cause I was gonna reference. All right, I was gonna reference Peyton Manning when he was with Denver.
Yeah.
Last time around.
Yeah.
While Tom Brady is clearly not
right, cause that year, like Peyton is. Right, that year Peyton had more interceptions than touchdowns.
Yeah.
If Brady does that, then he's not gonna.
No,
get
but
it.
Tom Brady's clearly not that.
Right.
But I do think that he's not necessarily putting up the numbers. So while his team may be great and they might finish with the fantastic record, and it might not be, it's not Tom Brady's fault necessarily. The weapons just aren't there, like offensively. Do you know? You got banged up Julian Edelman. You got banged up. Like he doesn't have the weaponry to put up the numbers. That offense has looked real sluggish the last couple times out, especially in the first half of the games.
Yep.
I think that's going to hurt him. But could he? Yes. And
at some point, because their defense has been outstanding. At some point, maybe they get in some games where they actually have to score points, and he returns to his form.
If he has those moments.
Again, not want to predict the end, but I do think you've seen a less perfect Tom Brady. Like, I think he's been vulnerable this year. I think he's thrown more interceptions. His completion, we talked about it. His completion percentage is down. His passer rating is down. He's uncharacteristically thrown consecutive games with an interception. I think you're starting to see a little bit of decline. And that's why I'd be more surprised if he got in that MVP conversation than not. But who knows? Maybe they'll get there. And Aaron Rodgers is always a scary, you know, he's lurking back there as one of the greats of this generation. All right, let's take a break. We'll see that game tonight. Chiefs at Broncos. I think the Chiefs could be in trouble because if they can't get off the field, they're going to find themselves in the same issue.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Kennel and Bell. It is Thursday. You know what that means. Our guy Emery Hunt is going to join us. Now, Raja, I have a question for you that involves Emery somewhat.
Okay.
Who do you think is the best dressed out of the three of us? Me, you, or Emery?
It's definitely me.
See, I would make the case for myself.
All right.
But I did see one Emery Hunt strolling the sidelines of one NFL game looking pretty fly.
Oh, word? Do we have a clip?
No, I don't think we have a clip. We'll have to get Joey for next week.
Skillet, what were you wearing? What's he referring to?
I had the mint green sports coat. And Ooh. Me being dark skinned, I look like mint chocolate chip out there. I was going crazy.
It looked pretty good. He was styling, I must admit. He looked pretty good. So we'll have to get some pictures of that for next time. All right. Let's get down to business as we have Thursday Night Football tonight. The Chiefs are a 3-point favorite at Mile High, going to Vesco, to play the Broncos. Are you assuming the Chiefs get back on track after the couple game skid?
Yeah, I'm assuming that. And when you look at the Broncos, the last couple of games, they played great defense. Their offense has sputtered, even though they've put themselves in position to win a couple of games. I think right now their offense is still an issue, and it'll make the Chiefs' defense look better. And KC's offense will look like KC's offense. They'll roll in this one.
All right, we've got two young quarterbacks as the Cardinals and Kyler Murray are at Danny Dimes and the Giants. The Giants -3. What quarterback gets the better end of this deal?
I think you have to go with Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals. Quietly, we've seen the timing start to click for Arizona. Earlier in the season, he was missing those deep shots downfield. Now he's starting to connect on those. Their defense is starting to find their pass rush. And right now, Daniel Jones is still holding the football a little bit too long, showing a lot of the stuff that we saw on film at Duke. So I would take the Cardinals in the points here to get the win.
All right, in another matchup, you've got Jacksonville traded away Jalen Ramsey. They're not going to see the fruits of that trade and for a couple years with all those picks. They've got to go on the road to Cincinnati's a 3.5-point favorite. Cincinnati's been awful this year. It looks like it should be an easy win for Jacksonville. Are you going with that?
No, I'm going to roll with Cincinnati. I'm going to take the Bengals in the points here. In a couple of games, you've seen the offense of Cincinnati really kick it into high gear. They should have beaten the Arizona Cardinals. Their defense let them down there. They should have beaten the Seattle Seahawks in week one. Their offense was kind of inconsistent there, and the defense let up at the end. But overall, I think they have enough on both sides of the ball to where they can keep Gardner Minshew flustered in the pocket and come away with their first victory of the season. I like the Bengals.
All right, let's move over to college football, Emery. You got the Gophers, Minnesota, with a huge number, 28.5, -28.5 at Rutgers. Do they cover that?
They cover that. It's a shame that Rutgers helped invent football and they're terrible at it. And when you talk about a team that just can't get off the hump or can't get over the hump and can't get off the ground, any team that's playing Rutgers, you are making good money, a good bet by just laying all the points with the opponent.
Minnesota is quietly 6-0. They beat Rutgers, they'll be 7-0. Then they play Maryland. They're going to get to 8-0 and start creeping around that top 10 before they play Penn State. PJ Fleck has that squad playing really well. In that spot. All right, the biggest I'll let you do the biggest game of the weekend. Right. I'll go with Tulane on the road against Memphis, a battle in the American Conference. Who do you think comes out on this one? Memphis is laying 4.
Yeah, normally you don't want to see a team have one loss become two, but I think that's going to be the case here with Memphis. They lost a huge one to Temple, who's been playing some great football. Tulane quietly has played even better football, in my opinion, than Temple. You look back at that Auburn game, that was a game they had won, and they let it slip away at the end. But Tulane is playing phenomenal. I think they keep Memphis on the losing streak by knocking off the Tigers. So take Tulane in the points.
All right, this one is interesting to me because we've talked a lot about Harbaugh and Michigan, and I didn't really realize that Penn State was as good as they were this year. So you got Michigan at Penn State in what feels like could be a must-win for Harbaugh and company there. Penn State's laying 9.
Yeah, I'm going to lay those nine with Penn State. I think this one will be a defensive battle. And the reason why I still like Penn State to cover, their offense you can trust a little bit more than Michigan. I think Michigan's offense is week to week. You don't know what you're going to get. And that inconsistency versus one of the best defenses, if not arguably the best defense in the Big Ten. I know Wisconsin's defense is outstanding. I think that'll keep that Michigan football team reeling on that side of the ball. So lay the points with Penn State.
If they don't, if Michigan gets run against Penn State, what do you think that means for Jim Harbaugh?
You know, that right there, it could be bad for him, but the good part is there are going to be some jobs opening up in the NFL pretty soon with the way these teams are playing out here on Sunday. So he may have a nice soft landing spot, a golden parachute, so to speak, to jump back into the NFL.
Yeah, he definitely would have opportunities. It's been interesting. Everywhere he's been, it's usually been about 4 or 5 years, and then all of a sudden he makes a move. It'd be interesting to see what happens. But we'll have to see what Michigan does this weekend first against Penn State. Emery, good stuff as always, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right, speaking of college football,
yep.
So we have no head-to-head top 10 teams playing each other, but there are several pretty good matchups.
Okay.
Well, actually, they're not. I was going to say. Because Ohio State, I think they're going to be like a 4-touchdown favorite against Northwestern. Clemson will be a heavy favorite against Louisville. Oklahoma is a 34-point favorite against West Virginia. Wisconsin probably similar. I do think there is one game in the top 10 of a team that should be on upset alert. And
Florida.
I don't even know if it's that big of an upset. It's the Florida Gators.
Yeah.
South Carolina is coming off a win, an upset win against Georgia when they went out there, had three picks. They totally stymied Jake Fromm. Their defense is really good, and I know Florida's feeling pretty good about their offense because they put up pretty good numbers against LSU. South Carolina's defense is way better than LSU's.
Yeah, I have no idea. Like, I don't know South Carolina except that they were sub-500 before they beat Georgia.
Yeah.
I can't say that I sat here and watched film. I've seen Florida a few times. Those hangovers after emotional wins sometimes are very real. And so, like, if I were looking at the game, I'd probably say, if I had to bet it, I'd say South Carolina probably has a little bit of a hangover after knocking off Georgia.
Right.
It was just tend to be what they are when you win a game like that. And that would be my only real insight into the game.
Yeah. Because Florida's a team to me. This is like the show me moment for them. Mm-hmm. If they're as good and they contend with Georgia and they're expecting to, you know, possibly play for the SEC East title, they'll win this game. They're only a 5-point favorite. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how they do. I think they're going to get beat outright by South Carolina. I think South Carolina is going to ride some of that momentum as a confidence, not the hangover.
Sure.
The confidence. Hey, we were having a rough season. Now all of a sudden we can beat one of the best teams in the country. I think Florida, on the other hand, might be reeling a little bit from their game against LSU. It should be interesting. The primetime game we were just talking to Emery about, Michigan against Penn State. I agree with Emery that Penn State rolls in this one. And I think the interesting question comes out is, what does it mean for Jim Harbaugh and this Michigan team? Because it wasn't that long ago. But the week they played Iowa, it was, man, if they lose to Iowa, it could go one way or another. And they squeaked by Iowa. It wasn't exactly a confidence-instilling win. Then they beat Illinois. Now they're in another position where I think it matters how they look.
Okay.
Like, if they get beat by 3 touchdowns, I think it's like similar to what happened against Wisconsin, then I think they're in trouble. If they can go out there and just keep it close, I think that's a best-case scenario for Jim Harbaugh.
That would definitely be better than getting the doors blown off. But if they lose to Penn State, I mean, let's say that Penn State, you got Penn State, Notre Dame, and Ohio State still left on your schedule. If you're Michigan,
yep.
If you lose any combination of the two of those, you're in trouble. If you lose all three of those, Danny, it's over. Like, it's a wrap.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody at Michigan.
Right.
Lose all three of those games, I think. Whether you're fired tomorrow or not, I think those conversations start to be had.
Right.
Twice a week rate. Hey, let's reconvene on this Harbaugh situation.
I don't know. That's an interesting dynamic. We have a Michigan man. Michigan's always very important. They want to have a Michigan man that's their coach.
I think
that's the problem with having a guy that you love that played at your school. It becomes really hard to part ways with him.
Right.
And I would just still remind, again, what happens this weekend, we'll see. If they do go off the rails, he still has 3 10-win seasons. So that's pretty good.
Here's what I'm saying. And that is good.
Right.
But if you're going to be handed a program, right, that was in not shambles, but it wasn't living up to the standard.
Yeah. No, Rich Rod was rough. Brady Hoke era, that was where they want to forget.
What you're selling as a coach is, hey, might be like not exactly great the first and second year, but you give me 3-4 years, I can get my kids in, I can find my quarterback, I can start to establish my culture, and it will get back to where you want it to be. Like, you can't now be backsliding, Danny.
Right.
Like, do you understand what I mean? Like, that is of concern if I'm one of the Michigan, like, you know, board of trustee members or something like that. Like, we seem like we might be going backward here. Then you look at his track record, like, you know, I talk about Larry Brown a lot. I love Larry Brown. Like, Larry Brown has a shelf life. Larry Brown, after 3, maybe 4 years, right, he's gone.
Right.
And it's usually, you know, he's got a personality that's great for a while, and then it starts to wear on people. And if I'm looking at that also with Harbaugh, and now our team has lost 4 games, I have to really be concerned about what the future looks like. And I had to start talking and having those conversations.
Yeah, for sure. It'll be interesting to see. That game is in primetime Saturday night. There we go. Welcome back to Kinnell and Bell hanging out here. A little funky there on the rejoin, but it's all good. All right. Joined by our guy, Rip Hamilton. What's up, Rip?
I'm a little overdressed right
now. Yeah. We appreciate the effort, though.
I mean, no one told me that I didn't have to wear a tie or a jacket.
Classing up the joint.
And I just talked to him for about 45 minutes yesterday. Right. I was on a golf course. Right. So, hey, he didn't even tell me don't bring a jacket or a tie today.
That's right. You know what I love about it is that all three of us have in common, we have young kids, right? Yeah. I have all girls, so I don't get the experience of youth basketball. I talk to him all the time about youth football, and then I see you posting about some tryouts the other day. You're trying to find talent all over South Florida to stack that roster. I could talk about youth sports for an hour.
Oh, absolutely. I had to call my president / GM / consultant, right, because, you know, he already got a couple years in. So right now I'm going through the whole process of finding kids, dealing with parents. So I always call my buddy right here. Give me a few tips about youth basketball.
Well, you know, like I know, and you probably see it too. I mean, with your daughter that plays golf, a sport that you know well, like, it's hard to find good coaches. Like, everybody's in it to make a buck.
Yeah.
And while you don't knock anybody's hustle, you want them to be taught the right way. So, you know, eventually, I never wanted to coach my kids. And then I watched a few guys charge us money to teach them the wrong thing. And then you're like, you know what? I'm going to do it. You know what I mean? So that's kind of the space that I find myself in with it, you know?
And that's the reason why I started my own, because we talked about it a few years ago, why he started his. And, you know, you see the process, and you see that a lot of coaches and guys are in it for the wrong reasons. And you know that in order for kids to make it, they got to have the core fundamentals.
Yep.
And a lot of times people skip that process. They too quick to teach a step back, but a kid can't even take
double step back between
their legs.
Right.
So it's a process, and you know, I'm kind of getting into it right now, and I know it's going to be an emotional roller coaster just dealing with young kids, because I always see my buddy Roger on the sidelines yelling and screaming, not just at his players, but the referees. So it just doesn't follow him on the NBA basketball court. It's following him on the AAU scene.
Just try to stay out of the anger management required classes that they make Raj take after a disciplinary action.
About? We always want our people to be authentic, right?
That's right.
It's authentic, bro. That's right.
You are who you are.
All right. We could take an hour talking about youth basketball, but I'm sure some people want to hear both your guys' thoughts on some NBA action that's going on. The latest news is the Wizards and Bradley Beal agreed to this 2-year max extension. Your first reaction when you hear that is what?
Well, he is the future of the franchise. I mean, they've been saying it the last couple of years, especially when John Wall has been out and hasn't been the leader that they expected of him in the locker room. And Bradley is the total opposite of him. He's the guy that gets to the gym early and often. John, you know, still is, in my opinion, the best player on that team, but he still has some maturity things to come over, how to be a leader. And Bradley has stepped in that role, so you can't shortchange him for that. And I think that right now with John being out, they got to figure out, you know, what direction this team is going. And he's willing to go through the aches and pains, the development of all these young kids that they've been drafting. So I think it's a great thing that Tom Shepard did. You know, that's his first big thing since he got the job there as being the GM of that ball club.
What if you were Bradley Beal and you were born and bred in the old regime that was there, and you saw the dysfunction at times that could be the Washington Wizards, what would you have to be sold on, aside from the money and the possible huge extension that could come from signing the two-year extension? What would he have to sell you on personally to become the face of that particular franchise, when it's been rumored that like every team out there that has a championship aspiration could be willing to swing at Bradley Beal and that contract?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that they're going to build the team around him. I think when he first got there, it was all about John Wall. You know, we're going to build the team around John Wall, and Bradley Beal was a nice piece for the Wizards to build that backcourt and be one of the best in the NBA. So I think now when you hire a new GM in Tom Shepard and him coming in and telling him and saying, hey, Bradley, look, you are the face of the franchise right now. You are the guy that we're going to put the team – we're going to put the team on your shoulders. He was an all-star last year. I think he's prepared and ready for that. But I think it was just all about letting him know that he is the key piece for this organization to get over the hump.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what hey, Rip. What's up, dude? What's going on, Rip? What's happening?
You don't have his IMB.
All right, guys. All right, here. This is my question for Rip and for Raja too, for you guys. So, Raja, you talked about the 2-year extension, but so the second year of that's player option, right? So, you talked about the big contract that he can get, 5 years, $266 million if he opts out in that second year. Does Brad Beal deserve to eventually become the highest paid player in the history of the NBA?
Man, so the question was.
I don't know what he's saying.
You can't read lips.
But his beard is longer.
It's moving, and his beard
looks very interesting. What he was talking about.
He was talking about Bradley Beal's ability to opt out in the second year,
yeah,
and then potentially sign the 5-year, $266 million.
Is he worth that?
Is he worth that?
Well, that's going to be a question. I mean, right now he's getting $36 million a year, right? So I think that was a situation for him to say, all right, I'm going to take it out in my second year just to see if everything you're saying to me, Tommy, that is
right,
true.
Sure.
So now I got the option to say, all right, you know what? If things don't work out after the first year, I can opt out and still go anywhere else. You hear rumors all year that Miami was trying to get him and all these other playoff teams is trying to go get him. But he kind of took a page out of LeBron James'
flexibility,
the way that he's been doing his whole entire career. Just knowing to see if the team is actually going to do what they say. Because, Roger, you know, like being in a league, sometimes the team will say, hey, Roger, we're going to do this, that, and the third. We're going to set the table for you for this way. We're going to play this
selling
amount of minutes,
bro.
You know, doing all this. And now you sign a 5-year deal, and then you're stuck,
you know,
especially after the first 2 years. So I think this is a situation where he sees what is actually going to happen with this team. Is this team going to be a contender? Because right now he wants to win.
Yeah, and to the question about worth, like whether he's worth it, I always say, like, if someone's willing to pay it, right, and the money that the owners are making, like, fans forget about that. If they're willing to give out max deals to the tune of 5 years, $266 million, that means, like, the getting is good.
Yeah.
They are making a lot of money. So, like, per the BRI split,
yes,
like, if he's worth that to them and that's what's been collectively bargained, yeah, he's worth it. And he's the, you know, it's all about timing, like, who's up to eat next. But, yeah, I would say he's worth it for sure.
And they forget, too, like, the ninth and tenth man on the NBA roster nowadays, ladies and gentlemen, is making $10 to $12 million. So, when you're telling me.
Stop.
The 10th player on your roster is making $11-12 million. Yes, he's worth $200.
Exactly, he'll get it. I do think sometimes you have to be careful of being greedy, which could be the case with Jaylen Brown, as it's reported the Celtics have offered him 4 years, $80 million, and he's saying thanks, but no thanks. I'm going to hold out for more. If he can get it, the question is, do you think he does?
I think that's a great decision by him. I mean, $80 million, it is a lot of money. But when you look out there and you see some of these guys and see what they're making, you look at his stats, only average 11-4. But you got to understand, he's playing with a stacked roster.
Correct.
You know, where you got multiple guys on your team that can average 20 points, but they're not. You know, we said the whole big thing about Jason Tatum last year making the next step.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're playing with a guy like Kyrie Irving and Al Horford and all these other guys on the team that can put the ball in the basket, it's not going to show up in a stat sheet. But I do think he's a guy that can really go to another team and not maybe be the first guy that you go to, but maybe a guy that can play the Robin role. So I think with him holding out, he's not worrying about money right now. I mean, we guys still make a lot of money right now, but I think he's just looking at the situation saying, all right, why should I jump for the money when I know that I can make more, especially in the next season?
Welcome to the show, bro, because I wish you were here like an hour earlier, because Joe and I were having this argument.
Okay.
I was saying exactly the same thing you're saying. Like, he's a talent, and Joey's like, the numbers don't support it, which they don't.
Yeah.
But you haven't had the opportunity to get the numbers that would support that. So I also thought it was a good move for him to bet on himself.
Yes,
like,
absolutely.
This may be more opportunity. Like, you know, Kyrie's not there anymore. Al Horford's not there. You know, he can spread his wings. Maybe they saw Gordon last year. He didn't look like what they had paid for, mm-hmm. you know, that first year back from injury. You roll the dice on that and you see what's up. Because I think he is that type of player. I don't know that he's a number one either.
Yeah.
But I think he is certainly a nice complimentary number two, maybe even high level number three on good teams. And they get paid, you know, more than that.
And the thing about it, you got to remember this. When Gordon Hayward came to this to the Boston Celtics, he had to take a back seat.
Sure.
Like, he was supposed to be the guy coming into the sophomore season. So I had many conversations with him, you know, during the season. And the one biggest thing that I always told him was, hey, just – you know, let your game do the talking. Don't get out here and talk in the media. And he hasn't. He's been a player on that team that really, you know, took the role of coming off the bench, even though after the first couple of games he was averaging 20 points.
Right.
You know, and took that role and accept his role and still came out and performed and kept his mouth shut.
Let me ask you about the Celtics specifically. What do you think they look like this year? Like, what – I mean, you know – everybody's just assuming you throw Kemba in the mix there. I don't know if anyone's really factored in the subtraction of Al Horford, mm-hmm. but you know, in the Eastern Conference, that's not great by any stretch of the imagination. Like, what do you think this team winds up looking like? Where do you see them falling in the pecking order in the Eastern Conference?
Well, I think last year, a lot of people expected them, me included, mm-hmm. that they would come out the East, especially with, you know, a healthy Kyrie Irving, you got Al Horford, you got veteran leaders on that team, and you got great role players and great young guys that don't have to take the next step quite yet.
Right.
You know, sometimes when you throw a young guy out there early in the year, sometimes they're not ready. But when you got all-stars on that team, then you really don't have to step up to that role. This season, I think with losing Kyrie, I mean, Kyrie is a special talent. People forget that. Like, he is, like, in my opinion, top 3, top 4 point guard in our game. Now you lose him, but you add Kemba Walker. Now, I think Kemba Walker is a better piece for the Boston Celtics.
Do.
Absolutely. I think he's better in the locker room for the Boston Celtics. But you still lose a lot of that in-game situation, a guy that can create his own and can score on anybody in the league. I mean, anybody. Kemba's good off the ball, too. I mean, he can score, but he is not as good as Kyrie Irving, ladies and gentlemen. But I think that this year they'll have a solid team. I don't think they're coming out of the East. I don't go into this season and saying, okay, the Boston Celtics is the best team in the East. I still think that they're probably more like 3-4, I think, with potential to get there. But I think their chemistry definitely is a lot better. But losing Al Horford is going to be big for them.
All right, I want to show you guys something that occurred last night, the preseason. This pass from LeBron James, I want you guys to evaluate this thing because it was pretty sick. LeBron, as he does, drives in the lane and then gets the sick kick out to Danny Green. If you watch it in slow-mo, like the flip, I don't even know how to describe it. He comes over there and just, boom, hits him perfectly. Now, people were going nuts about this. Do you think they should? Because sometimes I look at things, I'm like, all right, what do you NBA guys think of
look,
that?
Look,
is there some luck to it?
Really nice pass.
Yes. I mean,
but he would have known that when he got in the air that Danny was standing over there wide open. So he already knows he's wide open. Once he realizes he's drawn to and he can't get the shot off, all you really got to do is figure out a way to get it over there.
Totally.
So, like, I mean, it's a nice highlight, but I don't know that, like, it's a super miraculous type of play.
Yeah, I would have to agree with Raj.
See, that's what I was with you guys. Joey was losing his mind. He's like, you got to see this pass. It was unreal. Like, going to, I was like, was it that good?
And you got to remember, though, a lot of people don't know that LeBron James is naturally left-handed.
Right.
So that was a left-handed pass. So, if I'm a righty, I would say, yes, that is definitely a very difficult pass for me to do.
Yeah.
But when you're a guy that's a natural lefty and has the strength to get that ball all the way over there on time in perfect position for Danny Green to shoot, I mean, it was a very accurate pass, but I don't think it was.
Let me be clear. I can't make it with either hand. But I'll just sit here saying for a guy like LeBron,
right?
You know, as soon as he got midway into the paint, he had already made the determination
Absolutely.
Danny was going to be open. Worst case scenario, Danny Green standing in the corner.
Yeah.
Right.
And most great players, they see the play before it actually developed.
Right.
And that's something that every guy in the NBA don't have. A lot of people think that, okay, just because, you know, we got some of the most talented players in the world, but a lot of times players can't see the play that's going to happen before it happens. But he's one of them guys.
That's one thing I think it's underrated about LeBron is his basketball IQ.
Yes, totally.
Like knowing that type of next level stuff. I wanted to get something quickly in here. Joey's mad. He can't respond to it because you don't have your IFP. So that's tough. He's got to deal with it. When Joe Harris was asked, he was doing an AMA, and he was asked about flying on a team plane. And I was curious to hear this because we've told a couple stories about the differences in an NFL and NBA team plane. But Joe Harris said he had, honestly, on the team plane, this is quote, you had either of three options, watching a TV show or movie, sleeping, or gambling.
Okay.
And he said his rookie year, I actually did none of those. He actually counted Kendrick Perkins' winnings for him, and they actually called him the accountant. Would you confirm Joe Harris's account of the team planes?
I would say he's very, very accurate.
Yeah. I would add a fourth in there, a fourth option.
What was that?
Just dice?
Right there talking crap.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. If you're not playing in the game.
Totally.
Right? And you might be sitting in the row right behind the game, just talking smack.
But see, I didn't have no choice. I had to play.
Oh.
We had one motto, and it was the Ben Wallace motto. And you know him. I mean, you ain't going to really ever tell him no, right? So, I mean, but he had one motto, blood in, blood out. And that was if you played one game
and you were
in the Bure game,
yes,
you had to play for the whole entire season. So regardless if you went out and shot like 1 for 18 and got scorched on the defensive end, Ben Wallace was still coming to you on the team playing to tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, bro,
it's time.
Even though you're feeling a little sorry for yourself,
right,
you still got to come back here and play Bure.
Now, did you ever see spots? Because I saw this happen a couple times, and I think the disparity in NFL locker room might be greater from league minimum guy to a quarterback making 20. But what about an NBA rookie, first, second year guy playing with somebody who's maybe on a max deal? Is there a sliding scale when they do that type of situation? As you're in with the big boys. Well, you better be able to hang.
That's the one thing that we tell them. Stay out of grown folks' business. Like, hey, if you want to come down here and get in, you know, regardless how much you make, and if you don't have that money right now, right, hey, it was guys giving you a loan. They would say, you would get on a plane if you looked in your pockets and be like, hey, I ain't bringing no cash today because certain guys did that.
Yeah.
You know, it was another guy, an NBA vet, that'd be like, okay, here, how much do you need? And you almost got forced to play. Yes, absolutely. Right. Regardless if you had it or you didn't have it. Regardless if the check didn't clear you, guys were still forcing you to play in them games.
One of the worst situations I ever saw was when an equipment manager, who was a great dude, everybody loved him.
Yeah.
He was like coming back one time, he's playing cards, and you're like, man, and you could see it happening. Starts losing, it gets to be like, and it wasn't even NBA type money, I'm not assuming, but it got to be like 13, 14 grand.
Okay.
And the pot, and it, of course, went against him, and all of a sudden, I mean, he was crying, grown man tears.
Yes.
I don't know what I'm going to do. My wife's going to leave me. And thankfully, a veteran on that team said, hey, man, we'll look out for you. We'll make sure you don't have to do it. But it can get ugly. Listen, in a hurry. Now,
did y'all, so the NBA's changed its rules. Like, so the money's big in it.
I mean,
I've seen 40 racks, like, like that. Easy.
Yes.
But we used to be able to drink on the planes.
Okay.
So, you know, you'd leave somewhere and you go somewhere else and, you know, you got a 3-hour flight. And, you know, you already touched up the ball kit.
That was allowed to drink on your plane?
Yes. The NBA stopped.
Wait, you guys weren't allowed to drink?
No, we were. No.
Really?
Bro, in a mini bar taking a little, the little 2 ounces.
So you could bring your own, though.
No. I mean, you had to hide it. Like when I was in Detroit, they didn't allow drinking on the plane. No.
So they were ahead of the curve. See, we'd be and that always added an element to that card game.
Oh,
that
my
was
God.
Going on.
Tanner, you would think.
Got a little bit of He-Man juice.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Think your chest out a little bit right now.
I watched the game.
The only team I ever, and it was funny because Dan Reeves was sort of old school, but I think because of old school, they actually had the flight attendants serve alcohol. Sure. Then later, the last two teams I played on, it was always bring your own. But the NBA, the difference, NBA is a little bit smaller. It's easier to police.
Yeah.
There's not so many people. You got 120 people on it because you got 53 players. You got practice squad. You got a big coaching staff. The players are all in the back, so it's a lot easier to smuggle it in and drink whatever you want, and then everybody's just
If you put it in your bag, there's no one's going to be able to tell. Like, because, like you said, the coaches were in the front and all the players – wearing it back. But like you said, in them card games, when you add alcohol to it, guys get a little loud.
Yep.
Guys want to get a little physical, especially the centers and the power forwards. They want to get a little physical. So that is not a guard game when alcohol comes into
correct.
The
game. No, exactly. All right, we got to get out of it. We got to take a break. All right, I asked you during the break, Raj, if you had ever heard of anybody getting 58 penalty strokes in a round.
What?
And your response was, who the heck would that? And it was in the Senior LPGA Championship.
Okay, that's a big deal,
right? Senior LPGA Championship. Leanne Walker, she finished 73 over par, but 58 of those were penalty strokes.
How do you get 58 penalties?
That's what I was like. Did you hit it in the water? Like, all right, so here's a new rule, and I actually know this because of junior golf.
Can I take a guess at it real
sure.
quick?
Sure.
When something happens early in the round and you make a mistake, is it cumulative after
so
that?
That's what I thought. That was a good guess. I thought maybe she put the wrong score on like 10 holes right. or something like that, but it's even more – it's more unique than that. It's due to a newer rule. So the PGA instituted a rule probably 2 years ago that as a caddy – you are no longer allowed to stand behind a player to help them get lined up. And really, it's interesting that it was an senior LPGA because it was really happening on the LPGA tour more than it was on the men's tour.
Right.
For whatever reason, it became really normal for caddies to stand behind them, and it took forever.
Okay.
They're trying to speed up the game, so they said, look, you can't do it anymore, or it's going to be a two-stroke penalty. Well, Leanne Walker apparently hasn't played golf in quite a while, didn't know the rules. And so for every time she had to go back, she wasn't alerted of the rule until like midway through her second round.
Every putt.
Every time she putted, they were assessing her a two-stroke penalty. So they had to go back and adjust it in that situation.
And
it's kind of stupid.
You should probably tell her, right?
Someone should have told her like in the first hole, the first time you see it.
You just got a two-stroke penalty. Want to give you a little warning. Don't do that anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And but apparently her playing partners, I don't know if they were like, she's maybe, I mean, hey, it can be cutthroat sometimes.
She was still over par without the 58 stroke. She didn't win it. She wasn't going to win it, was she?
Right. No, I don't think so. Because I don't think her scores were that great without it. In other golf news, Tiger Woods came out yesterday. Famously private Tiger Woods. I think his boat was called Privacy, his $100 million yacht. He's announced he's coming out with his own memoir. He's going to write his own. He's going to, hey, there's been several others. I read Armin Katayan, who, you know, has worked a well-respected journalist, wrote it's a pretty thick book, and it's just called Tiger. It was really good.
Was it?
It's juicy, though. That's the thing that worries me. Like, if it's Tiger's book, is he going to give you the juicy details?
No.
So I think you can appreciate it from a different standpoint, like what goes in mentally, like some of the preparation. But I don't know if it's going to be as entertaining as some of his other ones.
Yeah, I didn't read that one. Did Hank Haney write a book?
Yes,
I read
they
that one.
Him.
I read that one. Yeah. I will read Tiger's book. I agree with you though. I don't know how entertaining it will ultimately be, but I'll read it.
Just give us some of the details.
No details,
But I think what you'll get is a healthy dose of hey, how far back I was, like how bad I was down and out.
Yep.
What was going through my mind there, and what's been through my mind now since I've been back on the big scene, mm-hmm. which I think is a really cool story. And I think it's one that a lot of people will like to hear, myself included. I think we're wrapping soon.
Yeah,
10 seconds. Perfect. Minutes. That's great. So I don't even have to tease that much because sometimes I have to sit here and stall forever.
Yeah.
I don't have to do that today.
Just 10 seconds worth.
Tomorrow
well done.
We'll just react to the Chiefs Broncos. Enjoy the game. Go Yankees tonight, too.
Yo.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS! Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island, you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday starting at 9/8 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.